Hi, everyone. That was nice, that. My question for Will and Alex is, who's David Cameron and who's Nick Clegg?
Hello.
So, thanks for inviting us. We're delighted to be here. We're Mandine. Is that working? Yeah. Peter Lyon, Warren Jackson. I hope you've seen our... We did a special sampler. That's a kind of 16-page greatest hits of the last three issues, which... We chose the colour to match the ceiling of the St. Bride's Library room, so we hope you enjoy it. Wanted to address... What I was going to do is to talk you through Mandine, how it works, how it started, and look at the magazine in terms of its design. But there were two points we thought I wanted to address from Rob's initial brief, which is really, Rob made a point about moving, you know, projects, design projects that move away from styles and conventions of their time, and also the idea of not waiting to be asked and just doing it anyway, which I think completely applies to what we're doing with Mandine. What is Mandine? Well, basically, it's a men's mag in the form of a fanzine. It's the antidote to lad mags. I'm sure you're all familiar with lad mags, the exciting products for teenage boys. And quite simply, it's an attempt to make something new, exciting, innovative within the category of men's magazines. This all started 3 years ago. I was mentoring a couple of young journalists in Brixton. And it's worth saying that Peter and Warren and I are all sort of relatively seasoned men's magazine professionals. And these young chaps were saying to me, you know, how do you get ahead in men's magazines? And I said, well, the best thing you can do, which is a piece of advice somebody told me years ago, but I never did anything about, was to make your own media. So do a fanzine, start a blog, that kind of thing. And at the same time, I've been thinking about the ideas of, you know, the kind of ideas of men that you get through the existing men's media. I mean, particularly something like GQ, who I work for, they sell very hard on this idea of the alpha male, and some, you know, magazines like Loaded and FHM talk about the lad. And, you know, we've got the metrosexuals, another kind of sort of rather fake archetype. And frankly, it was, you know, talking this over with Warren and Pete, we were sort of rather conflicted about this and thinking that they're all rather, you know, these ideas are rather sort of reductive and narrow about men today. So one day I woke up with the word fanzine in my head, and I was thinking fanzine man, manzine, the name came up, and I thought that's got a bit of a ring to it, and talked to Warren and Pete. And we decided just to do it, really. And at the same time, we were pretty bored of men's magazines as they are. I mean, in a lot of men's magazines, you get this very sort of categorical idea of content. So, they talk about gadgets, babes, sports, tech, that kind of thing, which is all very well and good. But they see, you know, those content categories seem to me, above all, useful for advertisers rather than for readers. So our thought was, could we make something original, honest, entertaining, plus also rather more accepting of a kind of broader, more nuanced idea of what being a man is all about today? I mean, this isn't, by the way, a political mission. It's just a kind of experiment, really. So just to talk about the context, this is our Phil Collins cover for number two. The context of this is, of course, that men's mags in the UK... There's a lot of problems in the market. Some of the big iconic titles have folded. Arena and Maxim have gone. Many of the others, their circulation's going down like that. But to us, it was quite obvious that this isn't just about ad revenues and readers going online. It's about the way that these magazines communicate to men. So, you know, I guess the sort of standard thinking on men's magazines, you've got sort of three tiers. There's a kind of the sort of quality, rather more intelligent, aspirational titles that were launched during the 80s. So... here's a picture of a man in the 80s, which, you know, they're sort of talking to the new man, so that sort of GQ, Arena, that kind of thing, a guy who's, some of the older members of the audience might remember the iconic Halifax advert with the suspiciously single man living alone in his Docklands pad with, and remember this, anyone? Easy Like Sunday Morning? Okay, it's just me. So those magazines, that was the first tier that seemed to launch and be very successful. In the 90s, the lad phenomenon came along, Loaded, Maxim, FHM, and that was very, very big as well. And more recently, the story has been fitness titles like Men's Health, Men's Fitness, and then on the other side, style titles, which, you know, things like GQ Style and Other Man, which are all about the, you know, about an idea of a guy who's very interested in his appearance, the, you know, the metrosexual thing. All about, those titles seem to me to be all about narcissism and vanity, really. But the point is that we think that those archetypes don't really work anymore. They're rather reductive. I really hope nobody's offended by the next slide, but there's a Zoo magazine, the famous Lad Mag. I mean, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there was a controversy recently with Zoo. They've got an Agony Uncle column written by the famous Mockney actor Danny Dyer. And recently Danny Dyer made the suggestion, there was a guy wrote to him asking how he could get over his ex-girlfriend, and he said, well, one of the ways you can do it is you can cut her face. And it was just, obviously, for, with good reason, a huge controversy kicked off. And to us, we think that, well, you know, the end point of Lad Mags is that kind of sexism, which obviously has got no place in society today. We kind of think that, you know, that strand of magazine publishing is pretty much creatively dead. So alongside that, you've got this idea with the more, you know, the sort of higher end, more glossy titles of aspiration, and, you know, a certain assumption that you basically kind of, you know, if you're a reader of Esquire, for example, then, you know, the idea is you want to be James Bond, you want to drive Ferraris, you want to sleep with supermodels, which is all, you know, it's a lovely idea, but I think the reality is that it's not real for most of us. And again, so these very, very aspirational titles, at the time when we were thinking about Manzine, this was late 2008, and the credit crunch was happening, and banks were going down, and people were losing their jobs, and suddenly magazines that were selling, you know, they were publishing about cars that were worth £100,000 and watches that cost £50,000, we thought that suddenly looks rather out of place in society. So we thought, well, you know, when, with Manzine, what we wanted to do was make something new. So we thought, well, how do we deal with these problems? Well, the simple thing to do is just to get rid of all those archetypes, you know, address men directly as men. And let's get rid of this emphasis on aspiration, which underpins all these titles. So the effect of that is that what that enables us to do is to, once you kind of, we're outside of that world of aspiration, outside of the world of archetypes, we can suddenly start publishing stories, content that are about the kinds of things that writers really want to talk about when they're not under pressure from advertisers or PRs or from, you know, trying to, there's no sort of, you know, we decided we didn't want to kind of have a standardized voice of the readers that you get in a lot of the existing titles. So, you know, so in Manzine we get men talking about family, about hand dryers, gravy boats, drinking, depression, food, all the really exciting stuff, really. This hand dryer, this is a regular thing in Manzine. We've got this thing, Objects of Disaffection. I mean, I think it's fair to say that men like to rant about things every now and again. And this was a rant about hand dryers. And this idea of sort of rather strange outside of the mainstream agenda content really seems to resonate with people, you know, more of a sort of popular democratic voice in magazines. This was a quote we had from a chap who left a comment on the Stack magazine's blog. He said, this is a fellow called Leonard, he said, I think I'm going to subscribe to Manzine. I used to think I was the only person to be curious about hand dryers, but I realise I'm no longer alone. There are many resonances here, from Private Eye to the books published by Monty Python, a touch of punch thrown in. So a magazine aimed at men in 2010 can touch the youthful memories of a man in his late 50s. I loved it, said Leonard. So that was very nice to hear. So really, the point about Manzine, it's a magazine that doesn't make a proposal to you as a reader. It doesn't say, this is how your life should be. It rather says, this is how the lives of our contributors are. And what we want to do, really, is just to publish stuff that's about men today and all their kind of contradictions and blur. And, I mean, there's a kind of recurrent question in advertising and marketing about, you know, there's this supposed crisis in masculinity and what's the point of men today. And the point is that we think that men are rather more contradictory than they've ever been, certainly in the way that they lead their lives. So, you know, it's perfectly possible to be into Ferrari cars at the same time as ornithology, which is true of certainly one of our contributors. So this leads on to design and format. Well, I'll just talk about this briefly, because I can tell that you want to get to the pub quite soon. When we were talking about this, right at the start, Peter was saying that all these ideas we had about aspiration, about archetypes, and about a rather more kind of democratic voice of men's publishing, absolutely have to be reflected in the form and content of the magazine. So Manzine is black and white, 32 pages, colour cover, which is a bit of pizzazz and glamour. You know, and we want it to be a popular product. You know, we want it to be cheap, friendly, and not, you know, in no way sort of intimidating, like I think a lot of those the higher end glossy magazines can be. Interestingly, there was the test case here. I think there was a magazine launched a couple of years ago called Buck Style. As far as I'm aware, it was launched by a chap who'd made some money in the city, and he wanted to do his own style magazine. And it came out, and I think they lasted for 3 or 4 issues. Jeremy, do you know how long they went for? 3. Very glossy, and their positioning was kind of, you know, lifestyle, style, food, interiors, that kind of thing. But it came out, and, you know, it's a very glossy, very beautiful thing. But to me, you know, if you're going to publish that way these days, it puts you on a direct collision course with Nat Mags, who publish Esquire, and Condé Nast, who publish GQ, and these are people with very deep pockets and great expertise. So straight away, we were thinking, well, we want to create differentiation. We can't compete with these people. We don't have the money. And plus, it's better if we don't, because we're saying something rather different about life today, really. Yeah, so so Manzine, it's a credit crunch product, really. And it's a fanzine. The format's A4. It's black and white. The stock is cheap. We're into using available materials, really. And Manzine is about honesty. And, you know, for us, there's nothing more honest than the A4 format. I can't design. I don't know anything about photography, illustration, typography. It's been fascinating listening to all that stuff today, but I personally wouldn't be able to spell my own name if I had to do it in Helvetica. When it came to the design, I did a few pages in InDesign, a couple of covers and some text pages, and they were very. My idea was to make them look like a combination of The Economist with a bit of Viz, with a bit of Private Eye thrown in, and I'm sure you'll be glad to hear that those things will never see the light of day. But I showed them to Warren, and Warren came back and said, "No, this needs to be. We need to make this really, you know, fanzine. It's got to look like really like it's been made on somebody's dinner table and stuff." So I guess the influences were, I mean, it was interesting to listen to Teal this morning talking about fanzine, and she was talking about how people often do a fanzine as a way to break into publishing. I mean, we're kind of going the opposite direction, really, because we're sort of professionals trying to do something amateur. But, you know, some of the influences were indie fanzines, the kind of things Teal was talking about, because with them you get a really, that sort of ramshackle, cut-and-paste, DIY, photocopied thing. Handwriting was always an interesting thing in fanzines. This is a piece my dad wrote. He wanted to write about his local brewery, and he's quite a fan of the A.R. Wainwright, the famous Lakeland walker and artist. So things like handwriting we thought were interesting. Another one was Dada. Waz might want to jump in and talk more about this, but... You know, the thing about the kinds of magazines that get produced today by the big companies is that they're very, very focus group. They're very scientific in the way that they talk to people. They're very ordered and rational. But to us, the point is that magazines kind of need to go a little bit mad these days, because when you get all that sort of super scientific focus group rational stuff, then that comes at the cost often of, you know, creativity. And they can feel a little bit lifeless. So here's our attempt at a Dada page. This was one of our writers, Jack, who decided one day that he was a constructivist and he wanted to make a statement to the world about constructivism. And I suppose the last thing to say is, you know, it's very interesting to talk, you know, to hear about all the... just the wealth of technique that people can use to make interesting print things today. What we're interested in is the really simple stuff, really. The point about Manzine was we always thought that it's there, it's something that we want people to read, and it's fundamentally about content rather than form. I mean, it's been interesting when we get written about online, it often tends to be as a design object in itself and how, you know, sort of ground, rule-breaking it is. But really, our point was that we wanted it to be read rather than to be revered, which is, I think, the kind of response when, you know, if you go to Magma and find one of those very heavy, sort of, you know, beautifully art-directed, expensive European men's fashion titles. They're kind of there to be, you know, I feel rather sort of intimidated by those things, really. Whereas Manzine, along with things like Viz, I suppose, or Private Eye, and When Saturday Comes, they're the kind of thing that, you know, we think you'd be able to stick in your back pocket and read on the bus and take home and then read in the toilet. And then if you've run out of toilet paper, you can probably find a good use for it. So that's it, really. So that's pretty much Manzine. I mean, what, you know, DIY, what we've done, what we wanted to do was make a DIY men's magazine. And I think we've created a differentiation within the category of men's mags. But above all, you know, as I said, we wanted Manzine to be revered rather than, to be read rather than revered. And what people tell us time and time again is the people who buy it online and in their shops, they read Manzine from cover to cover. They read every single word, and to us, that's an absolutely fantastic compliment. So that's it. Thank you very much.